Hi, I'm Larry Rifkin, and welcome to today's reading of USA Today. The date, Tuesday, April 16th. Their front page cover story is titled, Congress Grapples with Foreign Aid After Iran Attack on Israel, by Riley Began and Ken Tran from Washington. An Iranian attack on Israel over the weekend has put new momentum behind a stalled congressional effort to pass billions of dollars in foreign aid to a pair of key U.S. allies. After months of delay, House Republicans said on Monday they will take a different approach to get the issue across the finish line, put funding for Ukraine, Israel, and Indo-Pacific allies up for a vote on their own, plus a fourth bill that will include several other unrelated GOP foreign policy priorities. Those include provisions to seize Russian assets to distribute them to Ukraine and to force TikTok's Chinese parent company to sell it or face a practical ban in the United States. Whatever passes in the House will then be sent to the Senate to grapple with, and where it's uncertain if the measure can find the votes to become law. One thing is clear, the drone and missile attack, retaliation for an Israeli airstrike earlier this month on the Iranian embassy in Damascus, has been met with an outpouring of messages of support for Israel from lawmakers on both sides of the aisle. The new four-bill approach, discussed in a closed-door meeting of House Republicans at the U.S. Capitol on Monday afternoon in the wake of that attack, allows the conference's fractured membership to vote in favor of funding for Israel without simultaneously approving funding for Ukraine. It also introduces new uncertainty for the path forward for the aid package. The funding for Israel has until now been connected to another $60 billion in aid to Ukraine and $5 billion for Taiwan as part of the National Security Supplemental. The White House and Democrats on both ends of Capitol Hill have been urging the Republican-led House to pass that package as is, despite a vocal faction on the left that has raised concerns about sending additional aid to Israel amid the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Gaza. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby told reporters Monday that President Joe Biden still opposes a standalone Israel aid bill. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, a Democrat from New York, said Monday he'll take a look at it. And House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries, a Democrat from New York, told reporters he would hold off on judgment until we understand the substance. Along with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and a handful of moderate Republicans in the Senate, the Biden administration and its supporters in Congress maintain the dual approach remains the fastest way to get much-needed aid to both allies. However, House Republicans remain divided over Ukraine aid, which former President Donald Trump has expressed skepticism over. Around one-third of the GOP conference is staunchly against more Ukraine funding. Those supporters of the package say there would be enough votes between both parties to pass it if it reached the floor. The stakes are high for House Speaker Mike Johnson, who has the power to put the bill up for a vote whenever he pleases, but risks losing his job if he does so. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Republican from Georgia, has argued Johnson has failed the GOP conference and threatened to attempt to remove him from the Speaker's office if he tries to pass Ukraine aid. Greene left the closed-door conference meeting Monday afternoon frustrated with Johnson's plan, calling it a scam and the wrong direction. The conservative firebrand, though, did not commit to when she would call up her vote to remove Johnson. But the new approach seems to be well received by key conservatives in the House. House Freedom Caucus member Representative Andy Biggs, a Republican from Arizona, told reporters on Monday he supported the plan. And Republican Study Committee Chair Representative Kevin Hern, a Republican from Oklahoma, said Johnson is doing the right thing. While conservatives have often used procedural tactics to freeze the House in protest of leadership, they're signaling they will allow Johnson's plan to hit the floor for a vote. Representative Ralph Norman, a Republican from South Carolina, a hardliner who sits on the House Rules Committee, said he wouldn't stop foreign aid from coming to the floor, saying lawmakers deserve to vote on it. Johnson had been signaling for weeks that the House would advance legislation to support Ukraine, and on Sunday he told Fox News' Sunday Morning Futures that the House will try again this week to pass Israel funding. But in both instances, he would not say whether the House would consider the $95 billion Senate-passed supplemental. Republicans also said they were discussing a vote on each tranche of aid separately, rather than as a package, or a vote only on Israel funding, which has strong support among House Republicans. But the House has tried and failed to do so twice before. The first attempt in November passed the House, but has stalled in the Democratic-controlled Senate because the bill includes funding cuts to the IRS. Johnson's decision to move an Israel aid bill with spending offsets drew condemnation from Democrats and even some Republicans who said the IRS cuts have impeded congressional action on Israel. The second attempt, a clean bill without any funding cuts, in February failed in the House over bipartisan concerns it would take away leverage to pass Ukraine aid. That second attempt noticeably garnered more support from 46 centrist and pro-Israel House Democrats, who supported the legislation begrudgingly, while lambasting House Republican leadership for not putting the Senate package on the floor. The House is slated to vote on a swath of legislation aimed at sanctioning Iran and reiterating U.S. support for Israel in the wake of Iran's attack. With Israel once again on top of minds, it's possible another crack at a clean Israel aid bill will draw more Democratic support and pass. But such a move could endanger aid to Kyiv if Congress decides to move on it as a standalone issue. House Foreign Affairs Chair Representative Michael McCaul, a Republican from Texas who supports Ukraine funding, said on CBS Sunday that he has a commitment from Johnson that he will put it up for a vote. And House Intelligence Committee Chair Representative Mike Turner, a Republican from Ohio, told NBC that he expects a Ukraine aid vote this week. While Johnson mulled over his options under intense pressure to pass Ukraine funding, lawmakers from both sides of the aisle were attempting to sidestep Republican leaders and instead muscle Ukraine aid to the floor themselves. House Democrats have largely rallied behind an archaic procedure called a discharge petition that would force the lower chamber to vote on the Senate's supplemental package. The petition currently has more than 190 signatures and requires 218 to call a vote on the floor. It's unclear, though, if the Democratic effort can succeed. A number of progressive lawmakers, critical of how Israel has approached its war in Gaza, likely will not vote to discharge the petition. Democrats would need tens of Republicans to join them, and it's uncertain how many GOP lawmakers would be willing to effectively sidestep Johnson. The attack also comes as support for Israel has been shifting among Democrats. Frustration inside the left wing of the party has been slowly seeping into the mainstream, as Israel's bombing campaign in pursuit of Hamas has killed more than 33,000 Palestinians, according to the Gaza Health Ministry. Aid organizations estimated around half of the population is starving, as supplies have struggled to get through Israeli aid restrictions and bombing. Schumer, the highest-ranking Jewish official in American history, called for Israel to hold new elections to replace Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, in part because he has been too willing to tolerate the civilian toll in Gaza, which is pushing support for Israel worldwide to historic lows. That sentiment seemed to hit a turning point in recent weeks after seven aid workers, including an American with World Central Kitchen, were killed in an Israeli military strike as they attempted to deliver aid to Gaza. Netanyahu also refused to back down from a planned attack on Rafah, the southern Gaza city, where more than 1 million displaced Palestinians are living. This prompted calls for new strings attached to aid to Israel. 40 Democrats, including Biden ally and former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat from California, sent a letter to Biden urging him to withhold offensive weapon transfers to Israel. But that's unlikely to halt the Democratic support for the Israel and Ukraine funding currently in front of the House, which passed the Senate with 70 votes. Schumer on Monday called for swift passage of the funding, emphasizing the threats to Israel on all sides. Senator Chris Coons, a Democrat from Delaware and a close Biden ally, Israel advocate, and member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, told CNN after the World Central Kitchen strike, "I think we're at that point that the U.S. should pursue a change in policy toward Israel." But Coons clarified to USA Today last week that his comments represented a fairly narrow and precise concern about Israel's recent efforts in Gaza and should not be misinterpreted as being unwilling to support funding for Israeli defense. "I will strongly defend Israel against any attacks from Iran, from Hezbollah, from other Iranian proxies," Coons said. Limits on Access Hollywood tape, accusations of bias, possible fines, Trump trial, day one takeaways by Bart Janssen. With his legal team attacking the judge as biased and the prosecution calling for him to be fined for violating a gag order, Donald Trump's historic criminal trial on charges he falsified business records to hide a hush money payment to a porn star before the 2016 election began on Monday. Judge Juan Merchan continued his trend of rejecting Trump's motions to delay the start of the trial before he began sifting through 500 potential jurors with a goal of finding 12 to serve with six alternates. Jury selection could take 2 weeks, and the trial could last 6 to 8 weeks. Trump, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee, has pleaded not guilty to 34 felony counts of falsifying business records to hide the payment. Prosecutors asked Merchan to fine Trump for allegedly violating a gag order in the case, but he hasn't ruled yet. The size of the jury pool was quickly reduced as potential jurors said they couldn't judge the case fairly or had other conflicts. Hundreds more potential jurors remain to be questioned. Here are takeaways from the first day of the trial. Merchan opened the day by refusing to remove himself from the case. Trump's legal team had argued that Merchan's role is improper because his daughter heads a marketing agency that works for Democratic candidates. but Mershon rejected the request by citing an opinion from the New York State Advisory Committee on Judicial Ethics that his impartiality could not be reasonably questioned because Trump's case doesn't involve his daughter's business. The judge rejected a similar request in August. The court will not address this matter further, Mershon said Monday. Jurors can hear testimony about the infamous Access Hollywood tape, which caused a furor when it was released late in the 2016 presidential campaign, but can't watch the tape, Mershon ruled again. The judge repeated a previous ruling that he regards the 2005 video of Trump crudely describing grabbing women as too prejudicial. The $130,000 payment to porn star Stormy Daniels, which is at the heart of the case against Trump, came as his campaign sought to prevent other scandalous stories from breaking in the weeks before the 2016 election. Prosecutors wanted to play the tape as an alleged admission of sexual assault, but Mershon ruled that he would only allow prosecutors to describe what Trump said. What I didn't want was for jurors to hear Mr. Trump's voice, Mershon said. Prosecutors asked Mershon to fine Trump $3,000 for allegedly violating a gag order with social media posts about potential witnesses, but Mershon postponed a decision. Prosecutor Christopher Conroy said each of the three social media posts should be punished with a $1,000 fine. Thanking Michael Avenatti, a former lawyer for Stormy Daniels, who was in prison for stealing from her, for a statement calling it outrageous that potential witnesses Michael Cohen and Daniels can be interviewed on television, but Trump isn't allowed to respond. Trump said the statement revealed the truth about two sleazebags. Posting a photograph of a 2018 Daniels statement denying she had sex with Trump, asking whether disgraced attorney and felon Michael Cohen been prosecuted for lying. He's attacked witnesses in this case, Conroy said of Trump. In a civil business fraud trial earlier this year, Judge Arthur Engoron fined Trump $15,000 for violating gag orders with posts about his clerk. But Mershon didn't rule immediately. And he said he would hold a hearing on the gag order on April 23rd. Trump lawyer Todd Blanche asked for time to respond in writing. Police were investigating a bomb threat targeting the home of Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg on Monday morning, according to the Associated Press. Law enforcement officials said a 911 caller reported the threat just before 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Bragg previously faced an emergency when a powdery substance was discovered last month in a threatening letter in a mailroom at the prosecutor's offices, the AP reported. Trump gave a one-minute statement to reporters before entering the courtroom, calling the trial political persecution, and saying he was proud and honored to be there. This is political persecution, Trump said. It's a case that should have never been brought. It's an assault on America. That's why I'm very proud to be here. Trump cited unnamed legal scholars calling the case nonsense as he campaigns against President Joe Biden to return to the White House. Trump said the country is being run by an incompetent man, and the trial is really an attack on a political opponent. There is no evidence state or federal prosecutors targeted Trump to prevent his reelection. I'm very honored to be here, Trump said. Amid the legal wrangling before lunch, Trump appeared to nod off a few times, his eyes closing and head drooping before jerking back up, according to several news reports. One of the anecdotes was from Maggie Haberman, a New York Times reporter who wrote a book about Trump called Confidence Man, The Making of Donald Trump and the Breaking of America. Trump glared at Haberman for several seconds before walking out of the courtroom during a short afternoon break. After the lunch break, Merchant began calling 500 potential jurors into the courtroom in groups of about 100 for lawyers on both sides to question them. Jurors will remain anonymous, with their addresses revealed only to the lawyers. Merchant settled on a list of 42 questions to be asked, with a goal of finding an impartial panel of 12 jurors and 6 alternates. Potential jurors are being asked if they've ever attended a rally of Trump's or his opponents, or followed Trump or his adversaries on social media. At least 50 of the first 96 potential jurors were excused from the trial because they indicated they could not judge Trump fairly and impartially. At least 9 more were excused after they indicated they couldn't serve for other reasons that were not disclosed, leaving about 34 potential jurors in the first batch. The questions to individuals became more detailed. Merchant excused the 3rd potential juror for acknowledging she read or listened to podcasts by Trump critics Michael Cohen and former Manhattan prosecutor Mark Pomerantz, who quit when it looked like Bragg would not prosecute the case. The trial is scheduled to last 6 to 8 weeks, with Merchant scheduling Wednesdays off so he can handle other matters. Merchant said jurors would not be required to work on the Jewish holiday of Passover, so the trial may break after lunch on April 22nd and 23rd, when Seder dinners are scheduled, and not meet on April 29 or 30 when full-day festivals are held. Trump requested a day off on April 25th so he could attend Supreme Court arguments about his immunity claim in federal court, and on May 17, so he could attend his son Barron's high school graduation. Merchant rejected the April request, but didn't immediately rule on the May date. Arguing before the Supreme Court is a big deal, Merchant said, but he wouldn't alter the plans for the criminal case on that basis. Campus crime is spiking to pre-pandemic levels. By Suhail Bhatt and Zachary Shermel. As students returned to college campuses across the U.S., so did campus crime, data shows, alarming some parents so much they hired their own security force. They raised more than $40,000 to hire private security at the University of California, Berkeley, much to the chagrin of campus administrators. Half a dozen unarmed guards patrolled the campus for more than 2 weeks in March, according to Sagar Chithani, a father of 2 Berkeley sophomores involved in the effort. A month after Chithani dropped off his kids for their freshman year in October 2022, there was a fatal shooting near their dorm. Chithani and other parents were concerned that crime across the city of Berkeley seemed on the rise. A February shooting scared some parents, too. No one was injured, and a suspect was reportedly taken into custody. Hiring private security officers didn't sit well with Berkeley administrators. In a statement to USA Today, spokesperson Janet Gilmore said money intended to keep Berkeley students safe would best be spent supporting the school's police force. Hiring private security raises a number of questions, including the training and the experience of individuals hired by such firms, Gilmore said. The number of crimes reported by college campuses across the country rebounded to pre-pandemic levels in 2022. Crime reported from nearly 6,000 institutions rose about 8% from 2019, even though enrollments dipped during that time frame. The jump in offenses between 2019 and 2022 coincided with students' post-pandemic return en masse to campuses. Compared with year-over-year changes before 2019, the recent spike represents the largest increase since post-secondary institutions that receive federal funding began reporting campus safety statistics. Experts see little reason to worry and say the numbers are largely consistent with what colleges have been experiencing since 2013, according to S. Daniel Carter, president of the consulting firm Safety Advisors for Educational Campuses. Following a steady decline, starting around 2006, the number of crimes reported by colleges and universities remained pretty stagnant over the last decade, according to government data. Yet when foot traffic on or around campuses diminished in 2020 after classes went online during the pandemic, crime dropped precipitously in 2020. In the years since, it has inched up again. Supreme Court weighs obstruction charge against hundreds of January 6th defendants, including Donald Trump, by Bart Janssen from Washington. The Supreme Court will hear arguments Tuesday about whether an obstruction law wielded against 1/4 of the defendants charged in the Capitol attack on January 6th, 2021, should be invalidated. The outcome could help Donald Trump, who is facing charges related to trying to overturn the 2020 election. A former police officer, Joseph Fisher, who was charged in the riot, contends Congress approved the law in 2002 after the Enron scandal to target document shredding, which he did not do at the Capitol. But government lawyers contend the law is a catch-all that includes blocking official meetings, such as Congress counting Electoral College votes. The High Court's decision could echo widely because more than 1/4 of the January 6th defendants faced the charge, including former President Donald Trump. Several prisoners have been released pending their appeals because the justices could overrule how the law has been applied so far. But Justice Department Special Counsel Jack Smith has argued even if the law is invalidated for rioters, it could still be applied to Trump because of other actions he took leading up to January 6th. The High Court has no deadline to resolve the dispute, but a decision is expected by the end of June. Fisher entered the Capitol Rotunda on January 6th and confronted police, but he contends he wasn't violent. He faces a handful of misdemeanors with up to 1 year sentences and disputed felony obstruction charge, which carries a maximum 20-year sentence. Congress approved the law in 2002 as part of an overhaul of the financial system to prohibit destruction of documents after the scandal surrounding Enron, according to court records. The disputed language prohibits anyone from corruptly destroying or concealing a government record, or who otherwise obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding or attempts to do so. Well, that's it for today's reading of USA Today. I've been reading from their Tuesday, April 16th issue. If you have any questions about the articles I've read, call the Chris Listener Line. Here's the number. It's 860-727-9579. I'm Larry Rifkin. So long until next time.